Genealogy by Tim, Season 2, Episode 7, recorded July 24th, 2022. Well, it's midsummer, the height of the genealogy season. During the school year, I almost have to scrounge to get enough material for an episode. Now I have the opposite problem. I'm doing so much in such a scattershot manner that I hardly remember everything I did. Here it is near the end of July, and I'm all like, gosh, I've got to get an episode together. Here's what I have for you this month. A find a grave project, DNA test results on the way, and a data overhaul that's bringing up old memories. All coming your way on Genealogy by Tim. Let's start with the data overhaul. There's a Facebook group called Genealogy Do-Over, where you can get lots of stories like the one I'm about to tell you. Now, I've been doing genealogy for almost 14 years already. There are certain things that I did in the beginning that were a little sloppy or ill-considered. As time went by, I became a little more careful, but you can still find instances in my family tree software where I did things in the old way, and I never found them and corrected them. In this particular instance, I'm talking about media galleries in the Gramps genealogy software. Now, way back in the beginning, back in 2008 or so, the first genealogy software I ever used was FamilySearch's PAF, which stood for Personal Ancestral File. After, I guess, what must have been only a few months' time, I switched over to the Gramps software because it ran natively on Linux, which is my preferred operating system, and I've been using Gramps ever since. Part of the learning curve of using Gramps is managing media galleries, and there are lots of them to manage. Pretty much every type of entity in Gramps has its own gallery. By that I mean that individuals have their own galleries, families have their own galleries, events have their own galleries, sources have their own galleries, and so on. This introduces an ambiguity to new users. Which galleries should they be using to gather and display their photos, documents, and other media? Galleries for individuals seem like the natural choice for dumping most media items. It's easy to find. When you pull up an individual's profile, there's an obvious tab labeled Gallery, which just calls out to be filled. Once it's filled, you have a complete overview of the individual's photographic and documentary record. Now, as one adds events to the individual's profile, one discovers that each event comes with its own gallery. So there will be a birth gallery, a military gallery, an occupation gallery, a death gallery, a burial gallery. Each of these events has its own gallery. These galleries are not as natural of a choice for adding your media. For starters, they are three clicks down the rabbit hole, not just two. First, you have to click the individual, then the event, then the media tab for the event. So they're a little more tedious to access. Additionally, each event gallery is limited to that specific event. Each might have only one or two documents, perhaps a photo referencing that specific event. So why go to the trouble of viewing event galleries when all these media items are more easily viewable in the individual's main gallery? So early in my genealogy days, I basically shoveled all my media items for an individual into that individual's main gallery, and I mostly ignored the event galleries. But as I grew as a genealogist, I developed a philosophy that all features of a genealogy software program are there for a reason, and that if the intended use of that feature could be ascertained, then that feature should be used. And from that point forward, I've been using both the individual's main galleries and their event galleries. But I never did go back through the earlier profiles to fill in those event galleries. Fast forward to the present day. I now host a WebTrees genealogy website. For technical reasons, it's not yet convenient for me to do all of my day-to-day genealogy work on the website directly, although that is possible. For the time being, it's still more convenient for me to work on the GRAMP software and then upload the data to the WebTrees site. And the data is presented differently on WebTrees. On WebTrees, the event galleries are all showcased right on the individual's page, right under each listed event. And what in GRAMPS was showcased in the individual's main gallery under WebTrees is buried under a media tab. There's a bit of a role reversal as to which galleries are featured more prominently. Going forward, I want to enter data into GRAMPS so that it looks best on the WebTrees website. I also want to go back and fix my previous galleries so they display properly on the website. And that entails going back through each individual one by one and completing their event galleries with the appropriate documents. To avoid unnecessary duplication on the website, I then have to remove those same documents from each individual's main gallery. At the end of this process, each event gallery should contain the appropriate documents and photographs for that event, and what used to be the individual's main gallery will contain only generic photographs and documents not strictly associated with a life event. Phew, got all that? So, in the process of getting all these documents into their proper galleries, I'm going through individuals one by one, and it's bringing back memories of unfinished research paths. Of course, I can't resist going back over some of these with more modern research tools like newspapers.com to see what I can dig up, but doing this definitely slows the progress of the project. Now, I'm just getting through surnames beginning with A's and B's, but here are some of my rediscoveries. My maternal grandfather had a cousin named Sidney Ann Flick, who was known professionally by the name Sid Flick. Sid was a songwriter and had many compositions recorded and released by various artists on various record labels. Well, I spent a decent amount of time this month adding releases to Sid's online discography at discogs.com. Discogs is not just an online encyclopedia of musical recordings, it's also a collection aid and marketplace. I've been using it since 2017 to catalog and value my personal vinyl collection. Now I'm thrilled to incorporate it into my genealogical research. Music runs deep in this family, and Sid Flick had a violin-playing older brother named Sam Ann Flick. Sam actually played for a stint in Gene Goldkett's orchestra alongside such big band luminaries as Tommy Dorsey and Bix Beiderbecke. Sam tragically died of tuberculosis at the young age of 26, but not before being married to a woman named Pearl Hoffman. Pearl later remarried a man whose name I believed was Shar, that's S-H-A-R, but I dead-ended there for quite some time. Upon rediscovering this dead-end, I searched through Ancestry.com's public member trees and discovered later that her name was actually Sbar, S-B-A-R, not Shar. It turns out that the newspaper obituary where I got the last name Cher had a printing error that made the B look like an H. Thanks to this public member tree, I now have a recorded final resting place for Pearl that I'll be able to visit in the coming weeks. While preparing further galleries under the A section of my family tree, I came across the Arahi family. This family is another sort of research loose end. They're the grandchildren of a likely sister of one of the grandmothers of Sid Flick and Sam Ann Flick, whom I mentioned earlier. This grandmother, Katie Ann Flick, is my great-great-grandmother. There's a woman whose married name was Anna Schachter, whom I believe was Katie's sister, but I don't have any hard documents proving the fact completely. The documents suggest as much, but they are a little ambiguous. But I came across the Arahi family again last week, and these are the grandchildren of Anna Schachter. And the situation with them was that, as of 6 or 7 years ago, one of them, Marvin Arahi, was alive and in the Yellow Pages at the age of about 93 or so. I could have called, but I never picked up that phone. It's just one of those things. I never got up the nerve to call, so I took another look online for the Arahis to see if there have been any updates since then. A brother of Marvin, Harold Arahi, died in Florida only last year at the age of 95, but Marvin and several other aged siblings were listed in the online obituary as survivors. So Marvin was alive as of last year, and I got up the nerve to dial the number that I should have dialed years ago. Or two numbers, actually, and when I called one of the numbers, a woman answered who told me that I called the wrong number. She did not know Marvin. The other number didn't connect, so it doesn't exactly bode well for Marvin. I was not able to get through to him last week, but I did find a daughter of his on Facebook. I sent her a Facebook message. Fingers crossed that she finds it and responds. If she does, and if she can get me in touch with Marvin, that might finally prove the theory that Anna Schachter is Katie's sister. While fixing up the galleries on my maternal grandmother's side, I came across the Balmer family of Findlay Township, which is just outside Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. The trouble with them is that their burial location is unknown in the Clinton United Presbyterian Church Cemetery. This has been confirmed by personal observation since I walked the entire cemetery and did not find them, but also a thorough study of the cemetery conducted by Dr. Edgar Charles Wilson and published by Minuteman Press Printing under the apt title Clinton UP Church Cemetery Records. The Balmers were prominently featured under the heading, Where Are They? While I was out there in Coriopolis, I emailed Copeland Funeral Home, which handled the burial of Henry Balmer, my maternal grandmother's maternal grandfather, and they promptly provided a funeral record for Henry, which included burial information. The burial location, however, was identified only as family lot. And spaces on the document for section lot and grave numbers were unfortunately left blank. Well, while preparing the Balmer galleries for web publication, I rediscovered that Henry had both a daughter and a granddaughter buried at the same cemetery, and the funeral homes that manage these burials were later acquired by the same funeral home that was able to locate Henry's record. I wrote to the funeral home in search of these records this past week, and I'm presently awaiting a response. It would be nice indeed to find this family long missing at the Clinton UP Church Cemetery. Now, the last stop on this first leg of my journey in preparing family tree galleries for web publication is the Berry family. This one is on the other side of my family tree. It's on the paternal side. These are ancestors of my paternal grandmother. My paternal grandmother's paternal great-grandfather married an English woman named Harriet Atwood. And Harriet had sisters in America. Their names were Elizabeth, Anne, and Ellen. Each of these sisters married, and I know a little bit about the families of Elizabeth, who married Dennis Hawkins, and Anne, who married Charles Wetton, but I know less about the family of Ellen, who married Alexander Berry. And there's no real reason for this. It's just a research loose end that I discovered while fixing up the media galleries. So I looked a little into the Berry family for just a few minutes the other day. Ellen and Alexander Berry had several children, one of whom, Joseph, was counted in the 1870 census as a baby, but apparently died in infancy, according to the Family Search family tree. When I looked up his death certificate, I found that he was buried in Woodland Cemetery in West Philadelphia. This was a new discovery for me, and very interesting because Woodland Cemetery, or the Woodlands as it is commonly known, is perhaps the second most touristy cemetery in Philadelphia, behind Laurel Hill Cemetery on Ridge Avenue. These cemeteries are beautifully maintained with modern websites and in-person tours and online guided tours that visitors can follow with cell phones, and events calendars that bring in visitors from around the city. To my knowledge, I don't have any relatives buried at Laurel Hill, but I'll be looking forward to visiting the grave of young Joseph Berry at the Woodlands. And to get even more into the spirit of the visit, I plan to take the Woodlands Infant Burials Tour, entitled, aptly, When the Bough Breaks, Infant Burials at the Woodlands. Joseph may well be a part of it. So that's just a few of the memory lanes I've found myself wandering down when going name by name through my family tree this month, preparing their media galleries for web publication. Besides my own research this week, I spent a lot of time on Find a Grave. I've even added a section to my website where I log my recent Find a Grave request fulfillments. For those new to genealogy, Find a Grave is a worldwide catalog of gravesite data and photographs that has been very useful to genealogists since its inception in 1998. Information on the site is provided by volunteers, and I've learned so much about my family from the site over the years that it's my pleasure to pay it forward and photograph grave sites for the site for users who request them. Two cemeteries that I frequent for Find a Grave photography are Harnebo Cemetery in the Oxford Circle neighborhood of Philadelphia, and Philadelphia National Cemetery in the Oak Lane section of the city. Both of these cemeteries receive many requests, and both cemeteries are laid out in such a way that the requests are easy to fulfill without pestering any cemetery office staff. Harnebo is a historic Jewish cemetery, and the Jewish Federation of Greater Philadelphia organized a cemetery cleanup day last June, which I attended, and I stayed on after the event to take a few photos. Philadelphia National Cemetery is a relatively small VA National Cemetery in northwest Philadelphia, not far from my home in Jenkintown. It has had a flood of requests lately, and also a flood of volunteers claiming these requests, so I'm one of several people who are doing our part to get that cemetery data online for free. A particular research interest of mine is the Mexican War Monument. It's near the gates of the cemetery as soon as you enter. The monument is tall, roughly obelisk-shaped, and topped with an eagle, and inscribed on its three faces are the names of many veterans of the Mexican War, which took place between the United States and Mexico between the years 1846 and 1848. The monument and the remains of the soldiers it memorialized were originally at the now-defunct Glenwood Cemetery of North Philadelphia, and they were removed to Philadelphia National Cemetery only in 1888, and this makes them among some of the oldest veterans buried in the cemetery. The cemetery was established during the American Civil War of the 1860s. The Mexican War Monument is a tricky subject for some newer find-a-grave volunteers to photograph. Many are not familiar with the MM section designation of the monument. Also, many of the veterans buried at the monument do not yet have a memorial on Find a Grave, even though data from the Philadelphia National Cemetery was directly uploaded to find a grave from VA sources. So I've made a bit of a side project out of making sure Mexican War Monument requests are properly fulfilled, and also that the Mexican War Monument data is complete and properly entered from the VA's nationwide gravesite locator. Last week I created memorials for 6 soldiers that I identified in the VA's nationwide gravesite locator who did not have memorials on Find a Grave, and there are bound to be many more. This side project will most likely last well into the fall and winter, and I'll update you on the progress at a later time. Until then, you can follow my progress on the Mexican War Monument, not to mention my other Find a Grave contributions, at the Find a Grave Log section of my website, newly created just this past week. The last segment for this month's episode, Summer Challenges. How have I done on these challenges that I set up for myself last month? Let's go through them. Number 1, the trip to Boston. Nope, no progress on this, and time is running short for me to get this together before the end of the summer. I've got to get back in touch with Michael Smith for the latest on the condition of the Smith Monument at Holy Cross Cemetery in Malden, Massachusetts, and then I can hopefully plan that trip for some time later in August. Number 2, have my DNA tested. Check. I did receive and return my DNA testing kit from Family Tree DNA. I ordered the relatively inexpensive Y37 package, but I expect to expand on that in the coming months and years. As of today, the kit has been received at Family Tree DNA's Houston facility, and the results are expected within a few weeks. Number 3, do some Jersey Shore genealogy. This is literally scheduled for tomorrow. I will be heading to the Jersey Shore to visit my uncle, who has been down at my father's shore home right now as I speak. I'll be joining them tomorrow evening and stopping by both the Atlantic City Department of Vital Records and Seaside Cemetery in Marmora on the way down to Wildwood. I'll let you know this month how that goes. Number 4, cold call some unsuspecting relatives. I did get a little warm up here by attempting to call Marvin Arahi, but I don't think it really counts unless I get through to someone. I've got a couple more to try though, and I'll let you know how they go. It should be one of the easier challenges. Could be done pretty much any day, as long as I've got my mind on it. Challenge number 5, take my nearest Lancaster relative out to lunch. No progress on this one, and time is running out. For what it's worth, I did receive my learner's permit to drive a car earlier this week, so this event may end up being a car-based rather than bicycle-based challenge. We'll see if that happens. And lastly, challenge number 6 was to upload photos of Kinderhook Cemetery to Find a Grave, and I've been spending a lot of time on Find a Grave. I think I'm warming up to this one. Fits into what I've been doing lately, so I think I'm going to get it done. Updates will follow next month. That's all I have for you this month. The next time I post a podcast, it will be just about at the end of the summer. Then I'll be transitioning back into school mode by then, but not before making tons of great discoveries. Until then, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits. Mm-hmm.